Task 1.
You will hear four different extracts. For questions 1 to 8, choose the answer A, B or C which fits best according to what you hear. There are two questions for each extract. You will hear each extract twice. Extract 1.
Someday, housekeeping robots may be as common as home computers. But don't toss your clothes into a corner and wait for a robot to clean up the mess. It may be a long time before robots do many household chores. Even the most advanced robots are human-controlled machines. They can't see or hear or think. Robots do only what they are told to do, usually by a computer program. If you own a robot and want it to do something for you, you must give detailed instructions, step by step, movement by movement. Yet robots have been programmed to fill thousands of factory jobs. They load heavy equipment, weld cars, and put electronic parts together. Robots can do things that are dangerous or boring for humans. These industrial robots don't look like humans. They look similar to mechanical arms. More and more robots, however, do look lifelike. Some of them help doctors in training procedures. These robots have been programmed so their bodies will mimic disease symptoms. Medical students practice with these robots before treating human patients. Someday, housekeeping robots may be as common as home computers. But don't toss your clothes into a corner and wait for a robot to clean up the mess. It may be a long time before robots do many household chores. Even the most advanced robots are human-controlled machines. They can't see or hear or think. Robots do only what they are told to do, usually by a computer program. If you own a robot and want it to do something for you, you must give detailed instructions, step by step, movement by movement. Yet robots have been programmed to fill thousands of factory jobs. They load heavy equipment, weld cars, and put electronic parts together. Robots can do things that are dangerous or boring for humans. These industrial robots don't look like humans. They look similar to mechanical arms. More and more robots, however, do look lifelike. Some of them help doctors in training procedures. These robots have been programmed so their bodies will mimic disease symptoms. Medical students practice with these robots before treating human patients.
Extract 2.
The kiwi is the national bird of New Zealand, and sometimes New Zealanders themselves are known as kiwis. Now, kiwis in the wild are a rare sight. The kiwi as a symbol is far more visible. Apart from being in toy stores and airport shops all over the world, you'll find them on our coins and stamps. The kiwi is the smallest member of the genus Apteryx, which also includes ostriches and emu. It gets its name from its shrill call, which sounds very much like this, kiwi, kiwi. Kiwis live in forests and swamps, and feed on insects, worms, snails, and berries. It's a nocturnal bird with limited sight. Although kiwis have wings, they serve little purpose because the kiwi is a flightless bird. Since white settlement of the islands, kiwi numbers have dropped from 12 million to less than 70,000, and our national bird is rapidly becoming an endangered species. And so we have launched the Kiwi Recovery Program in an effort to save our national bird from extinction. There are three stages to this program. Firstly, we have the scientific research. This stage includes research to find out more about what kiwis need to survive in the wild. Then secondly, we have the action stage. This is where we go into the field and actually put our knowledge to work. And then we come to the third stage, the global education stage. By working with schools and groups as well as through our award-winning Kiwi website, we are hoping to educate people about the plight of the Kiwi. The Kiwi is the national bird of New Zealand, and sometimes New Zealanders themselves are known as Kiwis. Now, Kiwis in the wild are a rare sight. The Kiwi as a symbol is far more visible. Apart from being in toy stores and airport shops all over the world, you'll find them on our coins and stamps. The Kiwi is the smallest member of the genus Apteryx, which also includes ostriches and emu. It gets its name from its shrill call, which sounds very much like this, Kiwi, Kiwi. Kiwis live in forests and swamps and feed on insects, worms, snails, and berries. It's a nocturnal bird with limited sight. Although kiwis have wings, they serve little purpose because the kiwi is a flightless bird. Since white settlement of the islands, kiwi numbers have dropped from 12 million to less than 70,000, and our national bird is rapidly becoming an endangered species. And so we have launched the Kiwi Recovery Program in an effort to save our national bird from extinction. There are three stages to this program. Firstly, we have the scientific research. This stage includes research to find out more about what kiwis need to survive in the wild. Then secondly, we have the action stage. This is where we go into the field and actually put our knowledge to work. And then we come to the third stage, the global education stage. By working with schools and groups, as well as through our award-winning Kiwi website, we are hoping to educate people about the plight of the kiwi.
Extract 3.
Most people would admit that they would like to be more confident, more at ease with themselves. So, what is confidence? We all have an idea what we mean when we talk about it. One dictionary describes confidence as boldness. But that somehow doesn't seem to be quite right. It isn't boldness we are seeking. Self-assurance seems to be more like it. We want to be able to handle or be comfortable in any situation. Confidence has a lot to do with our relationships with other people. We don't want to feel inferior to anyone. We don't want to be bullied by anyone. We want to be able to walk into any room full of people and feel that we are just as good as any of them. Perhaps this is all very obvious. Of course we all want these things. Yet wanting and having is very different. And if not all of us have confidence, if we haven't been born with an abundance of it, we must set about obtaining more. Most people would admit that they would like to be more confident, more at ease with themselves. So, what is confidence? We all have an idea what we mean when we talk about it. One dictionary describes confidence as boldness. But that somehow doesn't seem to be quite right. It isn't boldness we are seeking. Self-assurance seems to be more like it. We want to be able to handle or be comfortable in any situation. Confidence has a lot to do with our relationships with other people. We don't want to feel inferior to anyone. We don't want to be bullied by anyone. We want to be able to walk into any room full of people and feel that we are just as good as any of them. Perhaps this is all very obvious. Of course we all want these things. Yet wanting and having is very different. And if not all of us have confidence, if we haven't been born with an abundance of it, we must set about obtaining more.
Extract 4.
I saw a fascinating program last night about research into human self-interest. What's to research? Selfishness is just not giving others a second thought, surely.
No, there were experiments. They showed that when you give people a financial windfall, they're happier if you insist they spend it on themselves.
Who wouldn't be?
You're missing the point.
So, what did the research consist of exactly?
Well, they gave two groups of people a sum of cash. One group could choose between keeping it or giving it to charity. The other group had to spend it on themselves. And the second group, virtually forced to be self-interested, turned out to be the happiest. Those that voluntarily kept cash were less happy, presumably because of the undertow of guilt of having made that choice.
I'm glad I didn't have to. Not easy.
One thing I took from the programme was how it's a good idea to pre-commit to any activities that are self-interested. So, make plans to see friends that are hard to break. Buy cinema tickets for next weekend now. You see, apparently the less freedom you have to back out, the more fun you'll have when the time comes. Because doing something for others instead won't feel like an option.
That's an interesting angle.
I saw a fascinating programme last night about research into human self-interest.
What's to research? Selfishness is just not giving others a second thought, surely.
No, there were experiments. They showed that when you give people a financial windfall, they're happier if you insist they spend it on themselves.
Who wouldn't be?
You're missing the point.
So, what did the research consist of exactly?
Well, they gave two groups of people a sum of cash. One group could choose between keeping it or giving it to charity. The other group had to spend it on themselves. And the second group, virtually forced to be self-interested, turned out to be the happiest. Those that voluntarily kept cash were less happy, presumably because of the undertow of guilt of having made that choice.
I'm glad I didn't have to. Not easy.
One thing I took from the programme was how it's a good idea to pre-commit to any activities that are self-interested. So, make plans to see friends that are hard to break. Buy cinema tickets for next weekend now. You see, apparently the less freedom you have to back out, the more fun you'll have when the time comes. Because doing something for others instead won't feel like an option.
That's an interesting angle.
This is the end of task one.
Task 2. You will hear a tutor and a student discussing the process of doing a research project on alternative energy. Listen and complete the flow chart below. Write no more than 3 words and/or a number for each answer. You will hear the dialogue only once.
Hi, James. How's your alternative energy research project going?
To be honest, I'm a bit confused about how to do the research for all the different energy types.
Well, the first thing you do is to make sure you focus your question. Otherwise, you'll have too much to read and you won't be able to select the key arguments.
So how do I do that?
Start with the general topic of alternative energy and then keep asking questions until you've narrowed the topic down to one particular area. Then, when you have your question, make a list of the reading you will need. This list should be general to give you some background, but remember, you'll need to focus on the issues related to the question, so the reading list should also be specific to the actual energy source you've chosen, whether it's wind or solar or wave power.
And then start reading?
Absolutely. You need to start straight away, but don't forget to make notes as you read. Otherwise, you won't be able to keep track of ideas for future reference purposes.
Yes, that makes sense. I think that's my main problem. I don't recall where I've read different ideas, so I can't find them again later. And my friends have warned me that not recording ideas in a system can really hinder your progress.
Your friends are right. It's a common problem amongst students. You need a system. Anyway, once you've done the reading and made all your notes, you need to organise them so that you can analyse and think about what you've read.
But I prefer to just start writing and then go back and look at my notes later.
I wouldn't recommend it. I think you need to give yourself more time to digest the material and arrange it into some kind of system ready for analysis in terms of relevance to your research question.
Well, that's a great help. Thank you, Professor Jenkins.
You're welcome. Come and see me again if you have any more problems.
This is the end of task 2. Transfer your answers to the answer sheet.